Okay, we're doing this
Ta-da!
Now. Welcome to The Story Goes. Today's episode, Sanjula, but we will know her as Sanj from here on out. Oh, there was confetti in the Zoom that we're in. That, don't you just love AI sometimes?
AI is very scary. iRobot did not go well for anybody.
No, that is a fact. Sanj is my friend. I've been fortunate to watch her grow through several iterations, professionally and personally. When asked to describe herself, she says she is human forward and likes to get shit done. Working in tech, she quickly realized that her passion for social justice and equity would be an important place to be in the corporate workforce.
And still make some coin, which I need because I'm a child of an immigrant and I have student loans and I like nice things. And security. So I think
who doesn't?
People who say money can't buy you happiness clearly have money.
When I asked Sanj what we should discuss in today's episode, the answer was simple, but the topic was complex for a number of reasons.
I think a lot of times when you think about diversity, equity, and inclusion work, or like even as an individual, what is meaningful or fulfilling to myself and my soul, and how do I do that in a 9-to-5 workspace? And I think you can absolutely do both things at the same time, but there's a couple of caveats of you have to create and carve out spaces for yourself, and you have to be incredibly strategic about the choices you make and play the game in order to then go make that impact. I think something a lot of people who have worked with me have heard me say is, you know, people have to care that you're going to die on a hill before you pick one. So how do you make those intentional choices so that you do have the leeway to do the important work for you?
The game is capitalism and the societal structures within. When Sanj talks about the game, this is it. Spaces where there's a clear end goal, but not everyone is given the same grace to meet certain milestones.
Because that's just the nature of how it works, unfortunately. Is it screwed up? Yes. But at the same time, it is a fact. And so how do you kind of deal with that and make it work for you and not the other way around and not form yourself to fit in these spaces that make these spaces fit for you?
So a deep and actually it's a very light subject. Obviously, we're going to be talking about levity
really
today.
Very trivial. Super trivial. Nothing matters.
Well, let's go to the beginning then. Sanj is the daughter of immigrants who moved to the U.S. in the 1980s, though they didn't stay for long.
I think it's interesting because, you know, you and I have spoken about it in the past, but I think a lot of my upbringing and formative experiences of my childhood, it now makes so much sense that I am the person I am and do the work I do, because I have been an other, so to speak, in a multitude of spaces and identities growing up that has really helped me be happily curious about differences and not uncomfortable by doing something different or coming across something I've never seen before. So I grew up, I was born in the States. My parents were both Indian immigrants. So they moved to the US in about the 80s. My dad was working for a company and he was gone 3 out of the 4 weeks of a month, where we all moved, and my mom was like, we're immigrants in America, why not be immigrants in Japan too? So I actually went to Japan just under a year, and I was there until I started kindergarten back in the States. I didn't need an English school because I couldn't even speak because I was a baby.
Right. Still do.
And so I went to like a very traditional Japanese preschool that are called like hoikuens. And so for a long time, when we moved back to the States and I was in California, specifically Southern California, I kept telling people I was Japanese because I spoke fluent Japanese. And everyone else was like, no, you're Mexican. And we were all wrong. I'm Indian.
She existed outside the country where her heritage was from, but also was not born in the country that 23andMe talks about. Things didn't get easier.
And then growing up in Orange County as, you know, a thick, bisexual, brown, liberal woman in the 2000s was not the most fun either.
She quickly built her second skin.
I have to be twice as good. I can't let anybody have even an inch of doubt, because I just never assume that I'm going to get the benefit of the doubt, or right. I'm going to get a second chance. Whereas I think a lot of people who have certain privileges just kind of assume that that's the case. And so I think I've really had to fight and intentionally work my way into being in spaces where I can be successful.
With so many boxes on the othered list checked, I wondered, what space was the most challenging to navigate?
I think one in particular that's probably not talked about as often, but is just blatantly so clear and in my personal experience, is I've gone from being 350 pounds to 180 and then back both ways, and just seeing how different society treats you. And I don't just mean friends and random people on the street, but how people perceive you at work, how people take you seriously. It really does make a significant impact. And it wasn't until actually I'd lost all that weight and I realized how much my career trajectory skyrocketed.
Wow.
All of a sudden, I'm working just as hard, if not less, to be honest, but I'm getting so much more out of it. And that to me, I think is like super sad, but like really worth expressing and sharing, because bias is real. You can't get rid of it. It's literally humans. And so by naming it, at least there's cognizance, and not everyone has to feel so sensitive about it. Just, you know, I work in DEI and I'm never going to be 100% inclusive ever. And that's okay.
When you were experiencing the, you know, your career all of a sudden skyrocketing, not having to work as hard as you once did because, you know, correlated directly with this weight loss, did you talk about it to anybody? Were you sharing any of it? Or was it, I mean, and there's obviously no right or wrong answer to this, but I'm so curious, other than being sad about it, was there anything that bubbled up?
Yeah, I think it took me quite some time for me to be really confident in myself and who I was as like a, I hate the word professional, but I can't think of any other word at this moment. I think I had to feel very stable and secure and confident about my career and my positioning and feeling very good at what I did and not worrying about it before I started opening my mouth. And so that leverage of being able to stand up and say, hey, this is how we should be moving forward, and I think we should be taking this seriously, I have to kind of earn my stripes, so to speak.
She worked hard, pushed through, and was strategic about her trajectory. She soon found herself in places she never thought possible.
I can totally understand where some people, one, don't even understand that they can be in these spaces and environments, because I never thought I'd be in the positions I've gotten into. I've gotten a couple of really great breaks that have allowed me to see that there's so much opportunity here. But at the same time, a lot of people don't want to put up with it. But for the people who want to make coin, want to climb that ladder and be in these like tech spaces and startup spaces and everything, you can absolutely do it. You just have to be honest about the fact that you've got to be really intentional and strategic and make some smart chess moves.
But we've skipped ahead.
I went to UC Berkeley in the Bay Area. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I have immigrant Indian parents. So, you know, it was like Harvard or bust for me. So I had a lot of privilege around education with my parents. Yeah. And so going to college was never a question. It was, is there going to be one good enough where my mom and dad can brag to aunties and uncles about? When I got to Berkeley, I think a lot of my grand ideals of higher education and university were very, very quickly shattered because of how much of a system it still is, right? Like, it's a large public school. They're not trying to inflate your grades. They don't really care. It's a pretty tough environment. And so, you know, I had this grand idea of like, I'm going to do computer science and I'm going to study all these things. And, you know, I was on a scholarship. I had financial aid. They require GPA requirements. And there's just no way I would ever be able to beat out the 18 other kids in my sections who have already taken computer science and are just doing it for an easy A. I learned that in this kind of environment, you have to be really strategic. So a lot of like the pre-med kids did psychology because bio was too hard. Or the business school was all a bunch of like 18-year-olds in blazers that took themselves way too seriously and wanted to be in finance. And so there was really no space for me. And so I remember going to my advisor and saying, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to declare. I just know I want to work in some sort of like human aspect of business, whether it's in sales, go-to-market, HR, doesn't really matter. Haven't really thought it through. And the advisor says, oh, honey, you know, people don't come to Berkeley to get jobs. They come to Berkeley to go to grad school and research. Because I was in kind of the undeclared situation. And I was like, well, I got loans. I'm not trying to get more before I know.
How nice for them. How nice.
Yeah, it was great. I'm like, I'm paying you for what now? But I remember calling my mom crying, being like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm working my butt off, three jobs to pay my way through school, and I don't even know what I'm learning. And I look in the elevator. I'm about to walk in. It's like, make your own major.
Aha.
Bet. Cool.
Wow. Whoa. Fate intervened. And so what did you make up?
So I did organizational behavior. So I got to build kind of, which is what I wanted to do psychology and business for. After I was like 3 weeks into my freshman year and realized computer science was a pipe dream for me. And so thinking back on it now, I think I'm one of the only people I know who's actually using what they studied in school. I wrote a thesis on employee engagement, right? Like did all of these, which is crazy to think, but I was at a very early age, I was really interested in how people come together and get stuff done, whether it's for money, for civic duty, for help or aid. It really doesn't matter. But like, humans and doing things is really kind of like the crux of what I've always been interested in.
To have so early in one's timeline an affinity for unifying individuals to achieve bigger picture goals, aspirations, you name it, it's unique, to say the least. Where did this come from?
I think I've never been the person who needs to be the founder, creator, you know, president of an organization, that kind of thing. Like in university, for example, I was blown away by the fact there was so little resources around mental health and mental health advocacy and awareness. And I would have loved to just join a club that was already doing that kind of stuff, but there wasn't anything there. And I just so deeply cared about these issues because, I'm a human, right? I just care about people's lived experiences. So I ended up creating an organization, and it was really, really fascinating for me to see how just a group of five people at first in a couple of years can change policy for mental health, raise $50K for our own resource center for counseling. And we were all students. It wasn't our full-time job, but by having a bunch of capable, competent, and motivated individuals, you can do a lot of big things. I think that's always been like a super big inspiring thing for me.
Though she doesn't feel the need to be the founder, she clearly takes those entrepreneurial strengths to most things. I wondered, with her financial goals and ability to rally teams around lofty ideas, was tech her natural next step?
So no, I thought I was going to go to, I thought I really wanted to go to law school. Funny. Jokes on me. But one summer, I did a lot of things in student affairs while I was at university too. I was an orientation leader. That's how I made a ton of my friends. The summer after I was an orientation leader, I honestly got really lucky. And shout out to Darren from Qualcomm in 2012.
Wow.
Who reached out to me.
Vintage.
Because they just needed someone to plan like engineering intern happy hours because it was the first time Santa Clara was going to have engineering interns. And I was like, I'm sorry, you're going to pay me to do what? I'm used to begging for like in-kind donations with tax ID numbers. And I'm like, I get how much per head to do what? And so I was a campus recruiting intern, and first of all, the work was really fun and I was good at it because I had done very similar kinds of things on campus, and you got paid and well, and I was like, this is great. And so I was like, screw law school. Let's go into tech recruiting.
Sanja's goals of financial stability diverted her away from law school. Did she have any regret? None. First thing for her, pay off loans. Then she would explore, and she did, and found out some core strengths along the way.
My first role full-time was at Amazon, doing tech recruiting, and I realized that there's a really big opportunity for people who are analytical and strategic to still make an impact in non-technical roles at tech companies, which I think is something that I never, frankly, had really thought of, because I didn't know anyone who did those things. And so very quickly, I think, one, because I'm a hustler and I'm open to learning and doing different things, I kind of realized this is not something I'm only really good at, but I can actually do new things, even in large places.
After building credibility in the form of exceeding her hiring goals, Sanj got an opportunity to shift to a part of the business not yet fleshed out. She loved it and found ways to make a difference.
So that's kind of where I started falling in love, like building new things, new systems, new processes, new programs. And I also learned that with a strong infrastructure and solid practices, even in the toughest of spaces, like computer vision PhD interns, you can make an impact in terms of representation. It's not going to be 50-50, but the right. small wins in the data show that you can actually make a difference.
So far, her career focused on university and new grads. It was great, familiar, and meaningful. But she wanted to see what life was like on the other side of the spectrum.
I ended up going to a coding boot camp and kind of working on their student success curriculum and job partnerships, because if I was going to take a chance on these kinds of programs and working in this space, I wanted to make sure it was possible on both ends of the spectrum, right? Because again, I like health insurance and I like to be employable.
Yeah.
And very quickly, you know, not only did a lot of my students get jobs, but they got promoted faster. They were recognized. They got other jobs. And so that's kind of when I was like, okay, I can actually like build an entire career in this. And at the time, I thought I only wanted to work on like DEI.
Sanj is all in or nothing. At the time, she thought this was her only option, the only way she could be in those spaces. This mindset landed her a role working in engineering recruiting at a large tech company, specifically in DE&I. And that worked for a while, until it didn't.
I think it's incredible the focus on moving the needle, increasing numbers of diverse people in roles, et cetera. But what was your experience as a diverse person?
I mean, I'm not going to lie, it was easy.
Okay.
The job, like at these big companies, the job isn't hard. It was more about the process. And I think where I got frustrated was the infrastructure got so big at some point that you really couldn't change it. And the people who were in charge of refining the process were even holding their teams accountable for executing on something, right? It was just too big of a thing to really make an impact at that stage of my career where I was, because they care about kind of time and role. And I tend to be kind of younger than my peer set at every kind of company I've been at. And so that's kind of when I made the risk to leave Facebook. And again, if I'm not into something, I'm not a good version of myself.
She mustered the courage to leave the safety of large tech and found herself working at a small pre-IPO startup. The decision to join wasn't easy. They were working on some intense stuff. It wasn't an obvious match.
I was kind of thinking about, am I a true advocate for the things I value and the things I care about if I'm running away from the crunchy thing? Or what is it like if I join the crunchy thing? Would I feel better? Would I be able to sleep better at night?
So she joined, and the role was different.
Okay, now I'm not recruiting. I'm taking all the strategy and like operations and programmatic pieces and analytical pieces and focusing my entire role on that.
She realized that in order to make the impact she knew she could, she would have to be involved in every step of their process. The foundation had to be good for her to be successful. All along the way, asking herself, is this the best way to do it?
If you don't know what your metrics look like, how are you ever going to look at progress? If you don't have standard practices, how are you going to have equitable experiences? And so that's kind of where I started thinking about, okay, then does having the title DEI actually matter? Would I have more of an impact if I was a recruiting leader and just was like, this is how we do stuff?
Certain that to make the impact she knew was possible, she'd need to shift her focus. She found a job at another startup, initially focused on all things DE&I, but it quickly became much more.
I had a really, really great chief people officer I was working for at the time. Her name is Jenny. And she not only valued equity and inclusion, but she also valued me and my brain and what I was capable of. And so I got a very unique experience of having my hand in every single thing, from compensation to hiring our entire HR team to writing certain policies and working on talent management. And so that kind of holistically gave me a really cool understanding of not just recruiting, but the entire people cycle. Yeah. And I think that's kind of where the whole focus has shifted now is less on kind of what the title means and more, am I building something?
November 2020 was deep pandemic. Sanj could throw herself 100% into her role, which worked for a while. There were so many new experiences and challenges to overcome. It was mostly great.
I worked a lot, I'm not going to lie. And I'm not a morning person. So that was pretty tough. And as a neurodivergent person too, it's, you know, flow is flow and you can't force it at certain times. So that made it a little bit difficult. But I think being on Zoom allowed me to make really intentional relationships with people instead of who I happen to be near in the office or who I gravitate to. And again, at that point in time, I had gained quite a bit of weight back. And so sometimes I wonder too, did I feel more confident and comfortable showing up as who I was because of my career or because I was on Zoom and people saw me from the neck up, right? Like, I'll never know. But I think that like those kinds of things did cross my mind. But I think all in all, working remotely was great for me because I could be incredibly intentional about who I was like talking to, what were the things I wanted to solve at the time.
Sanj likes to say that she's a monsoon fun kind of person, a little bit bigger than rainy day. Prepared for anything, she is proactive in her methods. She credits this mentality for her success. She builds credibility, which is essential when making capitalism work for you while also having to work twice as hard.
A question I ask, you know, when I'm talking to potential like leaders, even before joining a company, is in 6 months, if you're like, this is the best hire we've ever made, thank God for Sanj, what have I done? What did I fix? What did I do? Mm-hmm. Really focusing on that helps with then kind of taking that next step.
So that's what she did. And in her last role, she quickly showed the capacity and grit it took to lead the whole team. This monsoon fund mentality helps Sanj consider and strategize far into the future. She built credibility, and with that comes perks. To Sanj, you build that credibility before anything else.
I mean, look, in a perfect world, we shouldn't have to worry about it. But yeah. The truth is, perception is reality. And we are all at the fate of how whoever controls our paycheck receives us, unfortunately. And so I think there is this level of, if you want to make it work for you versus just, again, like there's a whole different conversation if you just want to kind of stay and exist in it, which is chill too, like you do you. As long as people are doing what they value, I'm not going to say a thing, right? It doesn't matter. But if you do want to kind of have the experience of how do I get to be in a unique position in some of these coveted spaces and organizations, you got to be smart about it.
Sanj talks a lot about showing up, which had me wondering, how have these places shown up for her? How important is a professional community?
It is incredibly important. I think my experience at Klaviyo, it really was the first time where I both really loved the people and really respected the people. I mean, granted, mediocrity is everywhere, don't get me wrong, but finding those key people to really rely on and to have your back and kind of help you drive what you need to get done and vice versa, because you all agree, we want this to go well. We're all here for the right reason.
What do you think impacts that moment at which, because I've thought about this often, my own trajectory, that moment at which mediocrity sort of seeps in and becomes the majority and is no longer, you know, in pockets of your business. And I wonder what drives that, right? Like, what do you think is the driver behind that shift to less excellent?
It is a combination of the capability of like, I hate the term middle managers, but I can't think of anything else. That piece, as well as like a fear mindset. If I have somebody saying, hey, jump, I need to explain to them how gravity works before I ask how high. But a lot of people are just going to ask how high and do it, which I understand because, again, you want the CEO and the executives to think you're great. But if you don't truly get to the crux of like, what are we solving for? You do end up building this culture of fear.
It seems that community at work, coupled with grit, integrity, and execution is key to achieve the end goal we keep talking about. But as you heard, fear is the killer of innovation. When the culture becomes about optics and less about execution, high performers like Sanj feel underutilized and bored.
I like to get things done. I feel good when I feel like I'm creating something or making it better. So if I'm kind of solving for the same things again and again, I'm not into it.
So she left her last role, It was time for something new. Still, she was proud.
On paper, this looks great. This resume, my Indian parents are very, very proud.
She turned 30 and allowed herself to absorb that the window of time was not getting larger, but smaller each passing day. Where was it all going?
I am way more fun than I've been having. I need to go have some fun. Because work will always be there. Climate change might end us all anyway, so like, what's the point?
Sanj was working hard and felt stuck. She wanted more. Needed a rest. Needed a break. Capitalism was going to work for her in this very new way, allowing her to take time off.
Was the decision to go have fun, go be 30, was it just like, yeah, no problem. It's a Tuesday. Let's get out of here. I mean, did you struggle with it or no?
No, I did not. It was very clear what I needed to do for my soul and well-being in general. And again, we talk about burnout, right? And what I realize is once you've gone under zero on that tank, you rest kind of only enough to get maybe to like 10%. And then you just go back to negatives. And so I'd never, you know, I've been working in some way, shape, or form since I was like 14. And I've never really taken a break unless it was medically required. And so I think for me, I really wanted not just recovery, but I wanted restorative rest as well.
So she made a plan.
My parents are Indian immigrants, but my dad was actually born in the UK. And so one of the benefits of the UK, at least still for now, is free healthcare. And so I got my citizenship through my dad.
Initially, the plan was to go for work.
But I think through all these things, I realized I wouldn't take advantage of being in this space if I felt obligated to show up for a company that's the reason I'm out there. So I ended up applying for Mind by Descent and quit my job and just moved out here to London.
Okay, but you are a Monsoon Fund gal. I love that this is so easy breezy, but I know that there was more strategy. And so when people are hearing this and they think, well, I want to do something like that, what were the things that you wanted to make sure you had in place, right? Mm-hmm. Again, going back to the theme, making capitalism work for you. How did you do that?
A couple of things. I think one was failed savings account. The government in the U.S. is not doing well. And so if you have money, they will pay you for that money. So that's one side.
That's
and
enough.
The other is I was really intentional about what companies did I think actually had the potential to go public, because equity is a part of your stock, right? And so those pieces too, once I kind of knew those things were happening, I started kind of strategically moving money into places that would make me money on my money, for when I'm out here, because I wanted to take an actual gap year. A literal year, which everyone doesn't recognize me at this point because I am Little Miss Corporate. but it's been great.
Yeah.
I really like it.
Understanding the difference between taking a break and being restored is essential. Deciding to take a break was easy for Sanj. The actual rest part, less so. I asked her to define it for us.
It means when I wake up in the morning, there isn't a sense of urgency for anything. And it takes a while for at least my body to even get to a place where I can do that, frankly. And so because you're in this kind of high cortisol, intense adrenaline all the time, especially working on the West Coast, globally, right? I'm up and I'm like, oh God, what am I waking up to? And it's nonstop and all of these things. And so really it sounds really simple and kind of ludicrous, but it's like sleeping and going on walks for my mental health, and just allowing myself to exist. I think like that, that's the thing that I think is something that usually doesn't get talked about enough. But you know, if you are an other in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, this is not the oppression Olympics, so to speak, but you're not really allowed to just exist.
To Sanj, it's an act of rebellion that she just gets to show up every day.
That's not what the world wanted.
A self-proclaimed good Indian kid. She had lots of feelings.
I mean, there's always fear, right? Like, I think especially when you look at the news for the last year and a half, it's layoff after layoff after layoff. Mm-hmm. And am I crazy for doing this? I feel incredibly grateful and blessed and privileged to do it. But like, again, both things can be true. I earned this. I made this happen for myself. I was very specific about what I wanted to do and was really intentional about those moves I made. I'm also allowed to be grateful and feel blessed. Like, so I think that's one side of it. And I think the other is I really wanted to do something uncomfortable one more time before I get too crotchety and set in my ways. If I think about the times of intense growth for me, probably not the most fun times of my life, to be frank. So to do something a little uncomfy, but still a little safe, like, I think that's like a good bet.
Given everything she has accomplished and all that she's experienced, it's clear why she is so passionate about making the system, not meant for her, really work for her. It's a testament to her greatness, but also a reminder of how far we haven't come. So I asked her, as I ask all my guests, pick an age or stage in your life, what gift would you give yourself?
I think being able to not care so much of like what other people thought of me, because they held the cards, they held the power, would have just helped me every day as a human. I think I've gotten to a point where I don't give a shit if people like me. I'm not here to be liked. And it's hard for me to say that because I'm a human-oriented human. Like, I'm the human check-in person, right? Like, I have a soul. But I do think that there's a level of don't give the people you wouldn't take advice from or you wouldn't want to go work with again, or you don't respect a certain aspect of, like, why would you let them influence how you feel? And I think I learned that only very recently. And I think that's a very powerful lesson.
There are days in which I suffer fools, as they say. And so do not suffer fools. I'm paraphrasing your gift to yourself. Sanj, this was excellent. I'm so, so happy that you stayed up. What time is it in London?
It's only 5:20. It's all good.
Oh, I like stayed up till midnight. No, I don't know how time
is. Same as Seattle. It's pitch black outside and it's like 20 degrees.
Oh, perfect. So it's like you never left home.
Yep. I'm still pale. I swear I'm ethnic. Just white, white, white.
Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Story Goes, the podcast dedicated to highlighting the everyday and celebrating the moments that shape us. The music was composed by Daniel G. Harmon, who also edits and produces this thing. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on my show, reach out to me directly at sophia@gifted.work. Thanks for listening.